right, everyone. Thank you for joining another edition of the Extra Rounds podcast. As always, my name is Mike Dice.
I'm Elias.
We're here to talk about all things MMA. Today we have two guests. Our first guest is a return guest from last week. First guy, I think, to ever do the show back-to-back weeks, but we liked him, so we had to have him on one more time. Rafian Stotts, he just defeated Rob Emerson at VFC Victory Fighting 56 for the bantamweight title.
Yeah.
So newly crowned champion. And then later we have Matt Schnell, Matt Danger Schnell. He's fighting this weekend in Nashville for the UFC. It's his second UFC fight against, I believe the guy's name is Hector Sandoval.
Yeah, that's right.
So we're excited to get to them. We should be talking to our first guest, Rafian, in about 7 minutes. But before we get there, let's talk about a few things going on in the MMA world. Most notably, the rumors surrounding one Conor McGregor, which seem to never go away. But in this case, he is reportedly fighting Tyron Woodley. That is a fake report. I want to go out there. That was a fake Ariel Helwani. So I know there was a lot of questions on Twitter, but that's not a real thing.
As in, like, a person impersonating
Ariel? Yeah, they set up an account, and it's like, and it's Ariel, but the last L and, or that last I in Helwani is actually an L.
Ooh, that's so kind gross. Of thing.
You know, do it for the retweets, I guess. But that's not true. There's still a lot of things going up in the date. This also was compounded by the fact that Conor posted something saying a fight announcement was coming soon. And then Tyron Woodley started a training camp, even though he doesn't have a fight booked, which led to everyone thinking, okay, well, something's going to happen with him. And that might very well be the case. They might have Tyron Woodley set to fight, and they just haven't announced it yet. And he's just going ahead and preparing, though he announced it on his Instagram. So I feel like if he was trying to keep a fight under wraps, he wouldn't have done that. You know, wouldn't have fueled speculation by saying he was going to start training camp, even though he doesn't have an opponent. And there's lots of reasons why that could have happened. He might very well suspect that he's going to be fighting the winner of Damian Maya and Jorge Masvidal. So he's just getting ready, knowing that there's two events, two pay-per-views really quickly in July. He could also be preparing in case the Michael Bisping Georges St. Pierre fight doesn't happen, and they want him to fight Georges St. Pierre in a welterweight title fight. That could be why. You know, there's no problem with starting a training camp and in case something happens, and then just stopping if nothing doesn't.
No, and there's not a whole lot of drawback to getting people talking about you either, and getting a lot of speculation fueled around you and what's next for you. So that's good in either case, right?
Gotta play the game. You know, yeah. Got to take full advantage of the internet rumor sphere that happens and, you know, capitalize when you can. Most notably this past weekend, Demetrius Johnson won and retained his belt, the record tying 10th title defense. He's now looking to break that record, but still the questions exist about his marketability as a star. It was supposedly, well, purportedly one of the worst watched Fox UFC cards ever. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think he's very marketable. Kansas City, and that was the most profitable event ever to be held in that stadium ever in terms of gate. So it's headlined by Demetrius Johnson. Fans were very excited in a relatively new market to see one of the greatest fighters in history fight. They were excited. They showed up. Did the UFC and did Fox promote the fight well nationally? No, they didn't. And so they didn't have great ratings. I think he's insanely marketable. He's a dominant fighter. He finishes many of his fights. He is a human perpetual motion machine, always moving. He has an interesting personality. He's a good looking dude. I mean, he gives great interviews, and he's been making history. So he's marketable. That's why Microsoft years and years ago were sponsoring him to a tune of big dollars before the UFC got in the way and kind of effectively nixed branding opportunities for fighters outside of Reebok during the day of. If a company like Microsoft can believe in Demetrius Johnson and think he's a way to increase sales and hit a market, then he's marketable. And I think the UFC is not very good at facilitating new stars. I think it took forever for Anderson Silva to catch on, despite his marketability, and we see how famous he became, how big the Brazil market became once again in MMA. Ronda Rousey and all women who have been very successful had multiple instances of commercial success in the UFC since they've recently been allowed, since the ban on women was lifted a few years ago. Dana White was doing a horrible job of promoting women, saying that there was not enough good ones out there and all this and that. So usually UFC stars are made in spite of or despite UFC's kind of failed attempts. I think the UFC has some particular problems promoting people of color and people in lighter weights as well.
Though the lighter weight thing could be kind of the traditional bloodlust MMA fan, but to your point, a lot of these fighters who have become really successful, like a Conor McGregor, do a lot of the promoting themselves. They're the ones who blow it up. I don't know that I made sure there's favorable matchmaking and those.
Sure,
kind of
right.
But
right.
You know, for and you can say the UFC helped guide Conor or let him get bigger fights because he was talking, but he also did a really good job at marketing himself too.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did almost all of it himself. Yeah, and that, you know, the attention grabbing stuff.
But anyways, that's. That's a debate for another day, I guess. The next question is, what's the next challenge for him? Is it something like Cody Garbrandt? Is it he said he wants to fight and get that record solo first? Yeah. But there's also been talk of him saying he wants a fight with Conor McGregor.
Yeah, no, I think he knows that. Yeah, Conor McGregor fight would pay big, and he's said people are talking about it. Even Brian Stenn, in who obviously I have a lot of respect for, and who's more knowledgeable about MMA than I'll ever be, in the ring after was I don't know what they were telling him, the producers in his ear, but like, hey, are you gonna jump up? Are you gonna make the jump to bantamweight? Are you gonna make the jump to bantamweight? What are we talking about? He had a whole career bantamweight. He fought for the title, went five rounds at bantamweight before flyweight existed in the UFC. He's done that. And he's been on the record for years now saying, I'll do it if they pay me like a super fight, right? And at this point, why wouldn't he try to become the record holder for the most title defenses? To get to 10, might as well go for that next. I mean, he is – I know bantamweight fighters and flyweight fighters – who have trained with and been around Demetrius, and I've seen pictures. I've never been around Demetrius Johnson, even interviewed him in person, but I've seen like photos next to him. Guys that are very, very short guys, and they tower over him. So for him to go up against bantamweights, he should get paid extra. You know, it would be truly a super fight. So I don't think he'll fight Cody Garbrandt next. Cody Garbrandt hasn't even defended his title. That's a weird.
Well, he's got super fight. A fight booked.
Oh, does he?
Well, he's fighting.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's true. After the tough season, that's true. Yeah. So, I mean, I imagine he's going to go for history. I don't know. It's weird that they're putting so much pressure on him to jump up right when he can make history now.
Well, he said these things.
Well, not really. He's
said
been
the
consistent.
One to TMZ.
Well, the Conor McGregor one. Well, yeah. Sure. Yeah, but I meant to like bantamweight. Yeah, to fight Conor McGregor. Sure. I think that's consistent with what Demetrius has said, which is I'll go back up and wait if it's for seven figures. Conor McGregor should be for seven figures. So yeah, no, that makes sense.
I mean, anybody fighting Conor McGregor should get their piece of the pie.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, well, let's try and see if we can get our first guest on the phone again. If you guys missed it, Victory Fighting FC. It was Friday night. Rafian Stotts fought for the bantamweight title against UFC veteran Rob Emerson, and he won. And it was an impressive impressive victory.
Won all five rounds, which I don't think Rafian, I think it's the first time Rafian has had to go all five rounds. He did it, you know, and he did it against another UFC veteran. This is the second straight UFC veteran that Rafian Stotts, a former Division II national champion in NCAA wrestling, has beaten. This kid is definitely knocking on the door if he's not already inside the UFC. Maybe he's already signed with them. Maybe he's already getting calls. But a very impressive win. And it was cool because we got to chat with him last week while he was cutting weight and getting ready to weigh in. He made that time for us. So I'm definitely looking forward to hopefully getting to talk with a more well-fed, victorious Rafian, because he was a great interview even before the win, and even while he was cutting weight and all that. But yeah, it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool to see him go up against a striker to go all five rounds. It's a tough challenge for him.
And it looks like we're struggling to get him on the phone. One of the perks of being a live show, so we will keep trying him, and we'll patch him through as soon as we get a hold of him. That being said, it gives us more time to talk about Demetrius Johnson.
Yeah,
so
man.
We can't be accused of people who are promoting Demetrius Johnson.
That's right.
Now, I don't think, I think the situation surrounding him and his marketability is interesting. I don't think people like lighter weights, the casual fan. Mm. I think they like the big guys, the knockouts, and that could go just from like the way the UFC was structured early on, focusing on the heavyweight classes. But I mean, we've seen like with the WEC and even maybe somebody like Garbrandt that the lower weight classes are marketable. And I mean, even to that extent, Conor McGregor.
Yeah, I don't.
But yeah, the thing that's so interesting is that he's got this Twitch thing he does, and he interacts with his fans, and he's so personable. To put it in comparison, Rampage does the same thing.
Yeah,
and he's extremely marketable and loved it. You know, so what's the difference?
There's differences in their personality, for sure, and the way they present themselves. And you know, if I wanted to put on the armchair psychology, I think promoters are often more comfortable when it comes to people of color and promoting people who present themselves in stereotypical ways. And Rampage Jackson, not with his fans and not at all interviews, but often, and this is something he's even complained about when he was kind of pressured into doing it in Pride, presents this wild man, literally like man beast character. He's howling and he's crazy and he's groping women and all that. Yeah, that's a very comfortable space for people to treat black men in society. It's not breaking any new ground. It's within the comfortable territory of boxing and fight promotion in general. So Demetrius Johnson, when we're going to say, hey, this guy is a by all accounts a great citizen, a family man, a working dude, and a history maker, and just an exciting, well-spoken, and also kind of sometimes like really outspoken fighter. They for some reason have trouble marketing him. I actually don't accept the premise that casual fans don't like lighter weight classes. I just don't see any evidence of that. I mean, the first UFC star ever was the smallest guy out there, and that was how the UFC was built, is the smallest guy winning, Hoist Gracie. You got Uriah Faber, Jens Pulver, BJ Penn are some of the biggest stars. You've got, obviously, Conor McGregor.
But
in boxing, you see the biggest stars in boxing are the lighter weight classes. 147, Oscar De La Hoya, Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao. A slew of Mexican fighters through the years who are some of the best sellers, and Miguel Cotto, or back to Mexicans, Juan Manuel Marquez. Like, I just don't see the evidence for that.
And that, I think it's important to clarify that there's different sets of fans. Casual fans are different than
Casual fans are the ones that make these guys the biggest stars. When you're selling the most pay-per-views, that's because you're getting the casual fans. You know what I'm saying? So I hear what you're saying, and I know that it could be true, but I actually don't. I see casual fans respond well to well-marketed, exciting fighters, regardless of weight class, right? Like, I've seen it happen over and over where, you know, Manny Pacquiao will sell millions. Floyd Mayweather will sell millions. De La Hoya, McGregor, Nate Diaz, BJ Penn, they'll sell so much. And, like, I don't think it's a real barrier as much as we seem to talk about it.
Is that a market that maybe the UFC just hasn't tapped into when promoting Demetrius Johnson?
I think that's the key. I think they haven't really put the smart or much effort into promoting Demetrius Johnson, personally. And I think they have trouble with nuance. I think their editorial department are the finest storytellers in the world, like Thomas Gerbasi. But when it comes to promos and a lot of the stuff they do and the way they approach it, to say nothing of the fact that there's their poster making, their graphic design departments, like many others, are being pared down now with cost reductions and budget reductions from the new owners. I don't think they do a great job of telling nuanced stories. And this is like one of your pet peeves with Tyrone Woodley. Like, what's the deal? Why can't Tyrone Woodley, you know, a He-Man action figure in real life who's involved in his community, a business owner, a family guy, knocks people out. Like,
Movie star.
Like, why isn't he getting the push? Why? And I think here's the answer. What happens with someone like Tyrone Woodley? You have his promoter trashing him in the weeks leading up to his last fight. That's what happens. You have Dana White, you know, like equivocating sometimes at best with Demetrius Johnson. Now he's saying he's the best and all that. That's fine, but I think that's the answer. I think when you have a promoter like Dana White who will throw fighters under the bus for no reason, you know, that will say there's not good women fighters, not good enough to have a division, Tyrone Woodley needs to show up and fight. You know, he shouldn't be proud of his last fight, the 205 draw with Stephen Thompson, a modern classic, an instant classic. When you have a promoter doing the opposite of promoting with certain people more, I think it becomes a real issue to me. So that's a mishmash, and some of it has to do specifically with Johnson, some of it's more general. But what I'm trying to get at is I don't think it's Demetrius Johnson's fault. And I don't know that it's even the fans' fault. Because a lot of fans in Kansas City showed up and paid a lot more money than it cost to watch for free on Fox. They put their money where their mouth was. They showed with their money that they had interest in watching Demetrius Johnson fight to the tune of a record-setting gate. So the fans are there. The UFC hasn't figured out or has not tried to figure out how to really market him for television, I think. I think that's the answer. He needs more of these Fox shows. He needs more pay-per-view headlining events, perhaps, but I don't think it's Demetrius Johnson's fault.
And to answer a question that we're getting on Twitter, yes, this is a The Rock shirt.
Oh, you finally, I came in late. I didn't notice you had it. We were talking about this last week. I like it. Let me see the back.
The problem
I know you weren't a big fan of it being in the back, but it's
is that they put things in the back.
It's still cool, though.
The UFC, I'll never forget, I went to one of the first events I went to. I bought this shirt and it said UFC with the event and the headliners on the front. Very simple. And I was like, I like that. I'm a simple guy.
Yeah.
So I bought it, and then on the back was the entire like fight poster.
Not your style.
That's just not my thing. Yeah. You know, but you couldn't tell because it was up there and they didn't have
yeah,
a shirt.
Right.
So like, or maybe they did and I thought it was a different shirt. I don't know. But
no,
anyways.
But it looks good. I know. I think I like the font. I think it looks dope. That reminds me, Mike, there was a teammate of mine, Henry, a long time ago. He's like the most quiet, soft-spoken, like humble person in the world. And back in the day when there weren't so many fight brands, he had this one. It was a Tap Out shirt. And at first it was just on the front, it just said Tap Out. And he liked it. And then he didn't ever realize in the back it said like something like tap or snap or nap, motherfucker. And this is totally not his style. So he bought this thing that all this like more curse words on it than he's ever said in his life. It's pretty funny.
So getting back to Demetrius Johnson, I'm sure it's because there's people who will be listening later and won't be able to see this awesome shirt. But you should check it out on the Sports Illustrated MMA Facebook page where we stream live and you can watch on Wednesdays. Johnson. He came out and said that he hadn't gotten the belts.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Do you think that was an overplayed thing, or is that just kind of a good example of this is the UFC?
I think it's underplayed. I think it's, you know, they do, for the big leagues, things come up too often that are really Bush League. Not having a belt ready in the event that Conor McGregor won at UFC 205, Bush League. And him having to call them out on it and then being so embarrassed that they had to go back and ask Tyron Woodley for his is Bush League. Having inconsistent belt distribution. Dana White afterwards says, I'm going to get him his belts, and I'm going to and we don't get a belt every time. Here's the thing. That's right and that's wrong. What Demetrius Johnson was complaining about is that he, with all these title defenses, hasn't gotten a belt for each title fight, when some fighters have. That is very true. I won't mention the name. I've been, while doing work, profiling and shadowing different fighters, I've been to fighters who have been UFC champions and who are one title reign champions, meaning they won it at one point and they lost it and they never regained it. They had multiple belts because they had multiple title fights that they won. Yeah. Michael Bisping has fought in two title fights. Demetrius Johnson claims he has two belts. That's not within. So what we're seeing is an inconsistent application of maybe non-existent rules. Some guys and girls will get more belts than others, even if they've had the same amount of title fights. And that's Bush League. That's weird. That's what I've been at. We, you know, you and I have both been like amateur fights, probably regional fights, probably. That's what they do, where they like they ask you to pose with the belt and then they take it away. That's what Demetrius Johnson says right. They do. That's weird and Bush League for a gigantic company to be doing. And they were right to be embarrassed by it.
And I know that like TJ Dillashaw has had a special display case made for him. Mm-hmm. And you see Daniel Cormier has done some Fox stuff remotely and he has his belt. And Conor McGregor famously posted the picture of his two Cage Warrior belts and his two UFC belts after becoming the double champ.
Yeah.
Then I know even at their own International Fight Week, BJ Penn had like a display and it had all five of his belts on display.
He's had two divisions he's been champion of, single reigns. If he has five belts, it's because they gave him belts for multiple fights,
right.
Not just ranks.
Well,
yeah.
And also, most notably, Ronda Rousey said that she would get belts after her multiple wins, and she, after the win at UFC 190 against Betch Correa, she gave that belt to a gym in
That's Brazil. Right. That's right,
and
a judo gym, yeah.
You know, there's belts mounted on the wall in Jackson Wink.
Yeah.
Georgia St. Pierre's famous for having never kept any of the belts he got. Mm. He would give them to people who helped him along the way.
I didn't know that. I like that.
When
we see like, hey, are fans not appreciating Demetrius Johnson? Why is that? Well, maybe because the UFC doesn't appreciate Demetrius Johnson as much as they should, as evidenced by something like that. And I'm glad he said, I'm keeping this. I'm not giving it back and all that.
It's a cool visual, though, that I think would... You know, he talked about the Floyd Mayweather picture.
Yeah.
To be able to recreate that.
Yeah.
Doing it now with 10, I think, would be a little premature. Not that he can't take the photo, but I just think
it'd
be cooler to save it for that 11th title defense because it would carry more weight.
Sure. Like, you know, at that point, 11's more than 10, for sure.
Right. But could you imagine him rolling in to his next fight, whenever that should be, with his 10 belts?
Yeah.
And then he bust them all out with the 11.
Wouldn't that be a cool marketing device that would get fans' attention, maybe to have them tune in? Wouldn't that be a cool thing a simple idea for the UFC to use?
The other thing is boxers always come to the ring carrying like a parade of belts.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of interesting to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that catches the eye and gets people interested. So it's interesting that the promoter hasn't thought of doing that for everyone.
Right. So... that mystery is yet to be resolved. Demetrius Johnson and his marketability and who's really to blame. We have our
opinions.
I solved it.
It's not Demetrius Johnson's fault.
Stop the think pieces.
Stop thinking. I got your answer.
there was one article that I think was on Vice Fightland by Jack Slack. And he said that one of the gripes against Demetrius Johnson is that the flyweight division isn't very good.
Yeah.
It's one of the common things used against Demetrius Johnson. He wrote this piece saying that
it's not that
the flyweight division is so bad or lacking depth. It's that Demetrius Johnson is that good that he makes good people. I mean, there's a guy.
That's clearly the case.
Joseph Benavidez, who's only lost title fights to Demetrius Johnson and Dominic Cruz, two of the best pound for pound fighters in the world.
Right.
And so that's if there was somebody like that in any other weight class, that weight class would never be thought of as weak, especially if one of the guys, the champion, held two wins over that guy. But there's also, there's pedigree. I think Cejudo, even though he lost rather quickly to Demetrius Johnson,
wasn't necessarily
a non-notable opponent. This is an Olympian.
No, and everyone was saying that Henry was going to be his biggest test. But when he loses to him, all of a sudden he wasn't tough competition. An undefeated Olympic champion, the youngest Olympic champion, I think, ever in wrestling from the U.S. I mean, come on. The reality is people who know what they're watching realize that there is an incredible amount of depth at flyweight. There are very skilled, very athletic fighters. All of whom Demetrius Johnson has beaten. Some of whom have really challenged him. He's been dropped multiple times. These guys can get to him. He's dominated guys over the course of five rounds. He's dominated people and beaten them quickly. He's had to come from behind. He's had to take damage and then overcome that. He's won in just about every way you can win, which shows he's been tested in many different ways, which would lead you to believe that it's competitive. And some, on the aggregate, he has a bunch of wins, and so it's dominant, but he's definitely been challenged. And again, if you know what you're looking at, like, and Jack Slack, I don't know the man, but I like his work. He knows what he's looking at, it seems like, from his analysis. And yeah, these are good fighters. Like, they're not, there's a reason Wilson Hayes was so upset about being submitted, because he's an incredible submission fighter. Yeah. Right, there's a reason guys like,
he has a jiu-jitsu background.
Demetrius
Johnson
one.
Beat him
with
an armbar. I don't think anybody expected that going
no and man, just a quick note on this: the straight armbar from the mount in MMA is incredibly hard to do. There's a reason you don't see many people other than Demetrius Johnson or Hicks and Gracie 15 years ago pull it off. It's actually really, really tough. I can get into why it is. It's tough to hit it. Think about it. There's not many straight arm bars from the mount that we see. Fans, let us know what your favorite ones are. You probably have to search it out on SureDog Fight Finder to see a bunch of them. But it's actually really tough to do. You lose your top position. It's a tough thing to finish. Demetrius hits it. He's very well-rounded, and he's beating great fighters. So, yeah, I think that's a facile argument. Good on you and good on Jack Slack for poking holes in that.
Right. And one of the interesting things is he's just so quick. Like, to watch him start doing the next thing and to see somebody trying to fight it off, like, it's just like he's a robot. He just goes. Like, he's just doing things. And I don't, it's like, is he even thinking about it? Like, you know.
Not in the moment,
Wilson Hayes does this and all, you know, he's already moving and shifting into a different position, and it seems like he's going so fast that people are just just laying there,
yeah,
letting it happen,
yeah, right,
because he's doing it so quickly. It's like I don't even think that their mind can compute what's happening because he's already done it before they recognize that he's doing it.
That's the key, right? Anytime someone, it's like with any other sport, if you get crossed over real bad, you know, and you look stupid, it's not because you're bad at basketball in the NBA. It's like that that dude or that chick, you know, anticipated your move and was able to move faster than you in a different direction and make it happen. If you beat someone and get wide open, it doesn't mean that cornerback is not like a good NFL quality cornerback. It means you had the technique, you had the foresight, you had the quickness to cut, you know, or had to, you know, complete a pattern to get open. And I think you're right. That's a good point. People look at it and like, oh my gosh, you know, these guys aren't even, they're not good when they see them only fight Demetrius Johnson because he's just having his way with them. But it's amazing. He's fast everywhere, Mike. Like he has good foot speed. He has great takedown entries. He's fast in his transitions on the mat. Like he has fast hands. He has fast kicks. He's fast everywhere. And his timing is great too, which is, I get it's different than speed. But yeah, it's amazing the speed at which he works. And I bet he's not thinking about it in the moment. I think he trains that way. And his body just reacts to it, which is a testament to his abilities and his training and his coaches. But yeah, the speed of his, everyone that appreciates him always brings up that speed. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
And it's speed with technique, right? Like he's not going fast and being sloppy. He's like tight as
he's right.
He's
not
fast.
Coming in, you know, like crazy lunatic and right. World star videos right. Just swinging.
Exactly.
He knows what he's doing. He's just he's gotten that instinctual where, you know, you talk about fighters talk all the time about being able to train and just rely on that muscle memory. It's just like, that's what's just happening. It's just like he lets it take over.
It's amazing. It really is amazing to watch.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with him going forward in the future. This weekend we have Cub Swanson fighting Artem Lobov in the main event of UFC Nashville. We're about to get our next guest on the line, Matt Schnell. He's fighting his second UFC fight on that card. We weren't able to get a hold of Rafian Stotts and,
we'll
unfortunately, it doesn't
later.
Look like he's going to be making it to the show. But Schnell's fighting on the card. A lot of people giving this card some grief or criticism
sure.
on social sure. media because Artem Lobov is main eventing right. with Cub Swanson. You know, I can't remember which fighter said it, but I'm pretty sure some fighter tweeted something to the effect of that. He's only on this. Maybe it was
Cub Swanson
said it.
Yeah,
that he's the only in a main event because he's Conor McGregor.
I think he said he's only in the UFC. I don't know. I could be wrong, yeah. But yeah, I don't agree. But yeah, that's Cub's trashing the main event, right?
Yeah, but he didn't get straight into the UFC. He did have to go through the Ultimate Fighter. So
yeah, exactly.
He was allowed to earn his way, but
he definitely earned his way. And he's
given
won.
He's a 500 fighter,
sure,
in a main event against somebody who's been a perennial contender.
Right.
It does seem kind of like,
yeah. I mean, listen, basic cable happens sometimes, right? Like you want Nashville on a Saturday night in April in between or right a few weeks before a pay-per-view, sometimes you're going to get that. I think it's an interesting main event. I think it's not I think there's other fights on that card that are could make a better argument for being a main event are just as good of an argument. So I think it's actually a card with a lot of good fighters. I'll watch Artem Lobov fight anytime, especially fight a guy like Cub Swanson who will probably stand with him. I think that's going to be a great fight. So they think that it's a great fight. And you know, Cub, it's an opportunity. Maybe if he's right that Lobov is so below him, then it's a showcase opportunity to get back up in the scene and climb the rankings again. Ale and Quintus coming back for the first time in a long time after a lot of injuries. He left and he was scratching at that top five, in my opinion. He had a lot of injuries, battling with the UFC. Looked like he was going to walk away, was willing to walk away. He's back, and he's fighting Diego Sanchez, who probably, in my opinion, shouldn't be fighting anymore, not because he's not a great fighter. He is, but just because of damage he's taken. But he looked great in his last fight against Jim Miller. That's an exciting fight. Got Joe Lozon fighting, and he could be fighting anybody, and it's a great fight. But he's fighting Stephen Ray, who's a really good prospect out of Scotland. So there's good fighters on this card. And if you have FS1, and not everyone does, but if you have it and it's already included in what you're overpaying for cable, it's a pretty good thing to watch if you got no other plans or no hot dates, right? Or if you can't convince your hot date to watch it. So yeah, it's a strange, you know, main event. Like, it's not going to break records for ratings probably, but I think it's good fights. I think there's good fighters on it. So yeah, I hear what people are saying. It's not a marquee main event. That's true.
And for those of you who are on the Twitter One Elias Cepeda will be there. He works for. You need a list to keep track of the places you work. But recently joining Flow Combat, yeah. We celebrated 1 year. Congratulations to the folks at Flow, yeah.
Flow Combat. It's Flow Combat and it's here, and that's pretty much it, man.
And a big congrats to Dwayne Finley. He's a fan-sided friend for his 1 year there and everything that he's done.
Fan-sided nice vet.
Yeah, he did a few pieces for us. He did it. If any of you have time to Google and look it up, he did a really cool thing with Ronda Rousey. That's probably one of my favorite pieces we've ever run about Star Wars and her.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Fandom. Yeah. So that's something you can check out if you have time. But anyways, back to UFC Nashville. It's a card I think that's getting a little slept on. Maybe there's some fatigue. It's the third fight, third weekend in a row.
That's true.
Of fights with. The UFC 209 and then consequently with the Demetrius Johnson fight. So there could be some of that, but we're looking forward to it. I believe we have our next guest, Matt Schnell, on the line. Matt, are you there?
I am.
Hey, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us during fight week. You got weigh-ins in 2 days. I'm sure you're cutting weight and hating life right now. So thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us.
No, thank you for having me. I'm actually doing just fine. Weight cut's going all right, so nothing too crazy.
Is the weight cut usually something that you struggle with, or do you have it down to a science?
It's always a struggle. I'm a big 125-pound fighter, but I've kind of learned how to trick my body into doing things over the years, and I think after this fight, though, I will probably invest in some professional help.
If professional help wasn't so financially prohibitive to get, would you have sought it sooner?
Oh, of course, yeah, of course.
Now, you're, Matt, this is Elias, and again, thanks for being on, man. Correct me if I'm wrong, your first UFC fight was against Rob Font, and that was at bantamweight, right?
Yeah, it was at bantamweight. I took it on about 6 days' notice.
That's exactly what I was going to ask. I was assuming you took it on short notice. What's the pressure that, just to help fans understand why fighters would do that, like to take a fight on short notice, to fight a guy that's already been in the promotion for a while, to fight up a weight class. What's the pressure that you feel as an up-and-coming fighter to fight anyone at any weight at any time when the UFC comes calling? Or what is it that you felt that made you do that?
Well, just understand that this is everything I ever wanted. I've worked my whole career to get to this point, to get to the UFC so that I can showcase my skills. Also, I like my chances in a fist fight, and We put it out there that we were willing to move up to 35. That wasn't an accident. The UFC didn't ask me to do something crazy out of the ordinary, and I did it. We were putting that in their ears. There was a lot of pressure. I'd never taken a fight on such short notice, so I definitely felt the nerves. But like I said, I like my chances in a fist fight. I went in there to win, and on any given day, I feel like I can beat high-level competitors. I train all the time. I stay busy. I stay in the gym. I work hard. So, sure, there's always pressure when you're going to get in there with a highly trained, dangerous guy such as Rob Font. But I promise you, I went in there with the intent to win. I went in there fully confident.
Do you, as a fighter looking to make the leap, is it kind of just understood like, hey, I'm going to get a call and it's going to be on short notice most likely, so I just got to try and find a way to stay ready to the best of my ability at all time?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's where we were, for sure. Coming off the Ultimate Fighter and everything, we knew that, my name was one of the ones up, high on the list to get the call. So I was aware that I needed to be in the gym and be sharp.
And Matt, you train at ATT, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and when did you make the move there? I'm actually not familiar. Like, when did you go to Florida and decide to do that? Because you're from Louisiana?
From Louisiana, I it was right after UFC 171. I watched Robbie Lawler fight Johnny Hendricks, and Justin Scoggins fought Will Campuzano, and I was a part of Scoggins' camp. I went out there and helped him out for 10 days and went to Dallas, watched the event, saw Scoggins perform. It was an incredible performance he put on against a guy who I had a lot of respect for, and Will Campuzano. I watched this guy come up my whole career. And, after that, I just said to myself, dude, I should be in there. I should be fighting in the UFC, too. There's no reason why I can't make this happen. So I packed everything I owned in the back of my Toyota Prius, and I hit the road. And I've been at American Top Team ever since. I was First time I tried American Top Team was February of 2013, maybe. So it's February of 2014. And so it's been 3 years at American Top Team now.
So for a fighter coming up in Louisiana, is it just kind of a situation where you realize at some point you're going to have to leave to go to one of these bigger gyms to if you want to take the next step?
Now, I will say this. I learned how to fight in Louisiana. You know, I built my skill sets in Louisiana between Tim Crater and Jake DeMint boxing and Brent Mason and Donnie Aaron. These guys all had a hand in creating the fighter that I became. I learned how to fight in Louisiana. I needed training partners and bodies and like-minded people, and that's why I had to make the move. Can it be done? Absolutely. But you just need a good group of people around you, guys who are motivated. And, you know, look at how many people are from Shreveport, Louisiana, who fight in the UFC. You know how many there are? There's one, and it's me. So it's like you got to go to find the place where people are doing what you're doing and interested and supportive of what you're doing as well.
How much confidence, on that note then, I'm imagining a lot, but how much confidence does it give you to have those sparring partners at American Top Team who are UFC veterans, you know, champions every day? Like, even before you made your UFC debut, is that what lets you know, yeah, no, I'm ready for this because I go against, you know, fighter X, Y, and Z, and I see what they're doing out there?
You know, I've always hung tough with the best guys. Everywhere, even when I was younger and I would get rounds with high-level guys, I would always perform my best against the best guys. So, yeah, you can take some confidence away from a number of the years, I'm sure I have, but, you know, it's also, you can also kind of lull yourself into a false sense of security because no matter who you train with or what you've done in the gym, you got to perform on the night of the fight. And you can pull some confidence from it. Go with some high-level guys, but it's important not to take too much confidence from it because it can get you beat up.
Who are some of your main coaches at ATT? We've had a number of them on, like Mike Brown, Dean Thomas on the show a lot. Like, who are some of the guys that you work with the daily the most?
All of these guys have a hand in what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Mike Brown especially. My kickboxing coach is Steve Bruno. That's who I work my kickboxing with mostly. But, I mean, we have a great staff of coaches at American Top Team. They have all put in some type of work with me at some point in this camp. Dean Thomas is the head coach, makes my schedule. I hit pads with him twice a week, you know. So all of these guys have recognized that I'm a guy that's capable. Not only that, but I show up and I work hard. So they've all had a hand in it. Steve Bruno has, since I've got to American Top Team, he's been a part of my team and my camps. This guy's always taken care of me, always taken me seriously. So I want to give a special thanks to Steve Bruno.
That's awesome. Your UFC debut obviously didn't end the way you wanted, and you know you're not a guy that's lost very often at all. You rarely lose, and I correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the only time in your MMA career that you've been TKO'd. And I'm curious about the mental side of it. Was it easier mentally for you to come back from that type of stoppage as opposed to a decision or a submission or something, because you're like, hey, I just, you know, I got caught and, you know, it's short notice? Or is it tougher to come back from now that you've had it, like a TKO or knockout, mentally, just to get right and get confident and all that?
Listen, it's always tough to take an L. You know, I had dark days after that. I definitely had to reflect back on some things and ask myself what exactly I was doing. But, you know, this is fighting. I have almost 30 fights under my belt now. And I would say probably 80% of those fights I've finished in the first round. So you just got to understand that this is the game. Fighting is not fair. Fighting's, you know, it's not the guy who works the hardest or deserves it more. Sometimes it just works out the way it does. And, you know, what can you do? You can't hate it. It's the game. I've done it to so many people. I've walked into so many people's hometowns where they've had huge groups of people there for them to watch them. Not going to putting them away in a minute and a half. Like, think about how embarrassing that is. So things come full circle, you know, and it just tests you. You just gotta take it for what it is. This is fighting. This is what I love. This is what I've done for so long, and I can't fall apart when I take an L. How many L's have I handed out?
Yeah,
a lot.
So going into this fight, you have time to prepare a full training camp. You know your opponent. You can do research because you're not trying to cram everything into 6 days. What are you looking to exploit in Hector Sandoval's game going forward? I think you outstrike him. I think you're a better grappler. Is it kind of one of those things where you just know wherever he wants to let the fight go, you can control it, or is there somewhere you're trying to push it?
Well, you know, I recognize where he's most dangerous, and we're just trying to stay safe in those areas. But for the most part, I feel like I have an advantage, especially in size and speed and things of this nature. The kid's a competitor, and he comes to win, and I'm not taking him lightly by any means. But I have so many ways to finish this thing. I have so many ways to put this away. You could sit there and try to guess what I'm going to finish this fight with, but there would be no way for you to know. If Hector Sandoval finishes fight, he finishes it with a guillotine. That's the only way he finishes it. You know, how many submissions do I have? Go and look at my record. All different. Arm bars, guillotines, rear naked chokes, triangles, darce chokes. I've got such a repertoire, you know. There's no way to prepare for every submission that I'm capable of. So we're just going to try and stay safe, let the fight play out, have fun out there. I love this, you know, I love fighting, I love this thing, and I look forward to it. It's going to be a challenge, but I look forward to rising to the occasion.
I'm looking forward to watching it. I'm actually I'm driving down to Nashville to cover the event there in person, so I'll have to say what's up when I'm out there. But yeah, it's going to be a good one. We were talking earlier, Matt, like about a lot of fans on the internet seemingly sleeping on this card. They're like, oh, the main event isn't like, you know, two champions or whatever. And what we were talking about is like, listen. Unless you got a hot date out there, there are a ton of really good fights and good matchups. And this one right here, the one you're involved in, is a great example of that. Whether or not casual fans know your name yet, you know, if they watch your fight, I'm quite positive one way or the other you're going to leave an impression. It's going to be an exciting one. Two really good flyweights out there. So yeah, this is a card that I don't think people should sleep on. Again, unless you got a graduation party or a wedding or something, people should tune in, man. Do you like when people underestimate you? Do you not care? Does it not really go into your psychology at all?
You know, there was a time in my life where there was no way to be underestimated. There was no way to sneak up on people. I had a huge target on my back. A lot of people were gunning for me coming off of the first reality TV show that I was on. So, you know, I kind of relish in the ability to fly under the radar. It's not something that I've always been able to do. And for me, it's kind of a blessing right now. I'm fine. Y'all don't expect much from it. Great. You know, I can't speak for the rest of the card, but I can speak for myself. Tune in. Make sure you watch that first fight on the Fight Pass prelims, because I'm going to go out there and I'm going to fight my heart out. And I can't sit here and promise that this is going to happen or that's going to happen. But I will try my best. My best effort will be put out there. So tune in and watch it. I've never been in a boring fight. I'm one of those guys who brings excitement every single time. So, like I said, I can't speak for the rest of the card. You know, I'm going to be sitting there watching it with you. but I promise you, my fight will be one to watch.
He's not lying. He's, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, one decision only out of all your wins.
That's crazy.
I have no idea. Yeah. That sounds about right.
It's a lot of submissions and KOs. You mentioned watching the fight later. Are you expecting to kind of just hang backstage and watch on a screen, or are you trying to sneak out into the crowd?
Well, my family will be there. We'll see. You know, I'll settle down. I'll cool down. You know, enjoy the moment a little bit. But, yeah, I'll probably come out. You'll see me. And then we're going to go find us a dance floor later on that night. And
yeah, boy.
Me and my fiance. Let's go.
Are you big country dance country fans? Is this line dancing we're talking about?
Oh, yeah. Well, I can do it all. Shoot.
See, I'm from Texas, so I can relate to that. I can appreciate
that. Oh,
yeah.
Listen, I'm a way better fighter than I'm a way better dancer than I am a fighter.
Well, I'm going to take up on that, man. We'll my wife's driving down there, too. We got some friends. We'll have to find you guys afterwards, hopefully celebrate and see you busting a second move out there, man.
Hell yeah, I'll be the one in the rhinestone suit with the beautiful blonde next to me.
That's wonderful. Lucky man, that's awesome.
Thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us today. Let everybody know where they can follow you on social media.
Yeah, y'all follow me at @danger_cage. That's on Twitter and Instagram. My Facebook fan page is Matt Danger Schnell. Y'all give me a follow. This is The Ascent. We're going to get this thing going.
He's just getting started. Thank you again for taking the time out to talk to us.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you. Appreciate you guys.
What an interesting person.
Yeah, that's awesome.
What a great fighter.
Yeah.
And he's a country music fan and a fan of the country dances, so that speaks to me personally. For those of you who don't know, I'm engaged and we're going through wedding. And yeah. I don't know. I didn't know this was a thing, but you go through things that you want on your playlist. So she's from Chicago, so she's not necessarily a big country music fan. So there's a little beefing there, and I'm like, you just trust me? Let's just go with this.
I'm looking forward to seeing what you pull out, man.
I don't know if you knew this or people who watching at home. Honky Tonks, okay? This is a bar where country music dancing would take place. The bar in maybe what some might deem a more authentic honky tonk. This isn't the case in all of them. The bar is in the middle of the dance floor.
No kidding.
Yeah, and you go in a circle around the bar. So like if you two-step in a circle around the bar. So there's some bars like in Dallas that I've gone to where there's a dance floor, but it looks like a track, like at a high school.
That's so crazy.
And it's raised up. So like there's like a ledge and then there's banisters around it. And then there's like certain points where you can try and get across to the bar. And there's people there's just people sitting and drinking in a bar at the middle, watching this all go around. And there's just people doing laps.
That's cool. I never knew that.
It's a good time. Yeah. So, and, you know, obviously this is in Nashville and now I kind of wish I could go to see Matt Schnell cut a rug, but it's interesting. It's definitely a different experience. This isn't like going to any kind of club and watching people dance. For those right. listening at home, I did air quotes, but
condescending air quotes.
Yeah, but it's interesting. Of course, the line dancing is something that's really fun to watch too. I'm not good at the line dancing, mostly because I don't ever remember what to do. But you can watch it, and you can pick it up and do it.
It's pretty cool to watch.
Just make sure that somebody videotapes it and we tweet out you dancing.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna have to find a boogie for his number. I'll be in touch with him out there. We'll try to get video of him if things go well for Matt Schnell and he's on the line. And out there dancing, we'll try to get footage of them.
Well, thank you again for tuning in to another episode of Extra Rounds. Sorry we could not get Rafian Stotts on the line.
We'll get him.
We'll maybe get him on later to talk about his big win. It was really impressive. For those of you who didn't watch, Victory FC 56, it's on UFC Fight Pass if you missed it. Fighting Rob Emerson, UFC vet. This guy, I watched it. It was an impressive performance. Mm-hmm. I think one judge didn't give him all five rounds.
Yeah.
I mean, just about as dominant as it can. You can see there's one point, I think, going into the fourth round or maybe the fifth round where right before the round starts, he just lets out this like roar from his gut that he knew he had won the fight. But I mean, just about as dominant as a decision can get. So big congratulations to him. That's a huge moment for him. I really was looking forward to seeing if he actually got to keep the belt because we were talking about that last time.
Yeah, we'll have to ask him about it. We'll
get down to the mystery of that.
Yeah. We'll get it done. Sometimes guys they mean well and they were like, yeah, I'll do it. Like I'll be on 2 days after this happened with Dustin Poirier, and just is such a whirlwind that they just they miss it and then they come back on later.
So and there's so much going on for him. I texted him and asked him if he could come on the show, and then he's watching the UFC event in Kansas City with seats I think he got from Dana White or the UFC or something. So I'm sure he's been making the rounds and it just got lost in the shuffle. So no.
More stories to ask him for when it's on again. Yeah.
Maybe there's something really cool going on right now that we
hope
can
hear so.
About. But thank you again for tuning in and watching another edition of Extra Rounds. Make sure to subscribe in iTunes, Google Play. We're on Blog Talk Radio now. Anywhere, wherever you listen to podcasts, subscribe, we're there. If you want to watch, we always stream live on the Sports Illustrated MMA Facebook page. It's just facebook.com/SportsIllustratedMMA. Wednesdays, 2 p.m. Central, 3 Eastern. Those are the only time zones I know. But
noon Pacific.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Noon Pacific. Yeah. One mountain time, I guess.
That's right.
So just make sure to tune in and watch. We try to have at least one guest on every week. We're going to start working on next week's guest. Maybe Rafian Stotts will be one of them for next week's episode. But make sure to follow Extra Rounds on Twitter as well, and we will get those announcements out as soon as we can. But thank you again for everyone tuning in. See you all next week.